Are we ready to go, Robin?
Okay, thank you. Okay, back at 7:06 p.m., Planning Commission reconvening after recess quickly. It's Tuesday, July 2nd, and now we're on item F, which is work study for the 2019 Comprehensive Plan Amendment Update with Mr. Peter Best from DCD. And are you both presenting?
Dave Ward from DCD and Peter Best.
Okay. Very good. Thanks. Take it away.
All right. Good evening. So the season of comprehensive plan amendments is beginning. This is regarding the comprehensive plan amendment procedures, which were docketed to be reviewed and updated. And what we're here to discuss tonight is really the scoping of those changes before we actually get into to write a formal proposal that will be considered in August by you. So really tonight really looking for to brief you and get your feedback on kind of the objectives and the likely scope of changes that will be considered. So I'll go through a brief introduction through our 8-year update cycle and our current annual amendment process, have an opportunity for some questions there, and then open it for discussion around the objectives and the types of changes likely to be considered. Hope you've had a chance to look at the materials for reference. Attachment 2 is a summary, a very brief summary of GMA requirements, trying to take what is a very arcane and dense procedural code language, make it readable for you. Attachment 3 and 4, similarly, graphically and in plain language, trying to explain our current process. Attachment 5 is the full county code that we'll be revising, Chapter 2108. And attachment 6 is a comparison of 10 jurisdictions, including the county, the cities in the county, the three other Puget Sound Regional Council counties, as well as two other counties, Thurston and Whatcom, that are comparably sized and also have to do buildable lands analysis. So hopefully a fairly thorough review of comparable counties. And that's that, just for clarification, is focused around their docketing procedures, does not include criteria, which we'll get into when we have a full-blown proposal to review. So for context, we're required to kind of on an ongoing or continual basis review our comprehensive plan. And what that means is instead of just sticking it on the shelf and letting it collect dust, we're required to periodically review it and make sure it's clear, current, and being implemented. So there is review, evaluation, and revision requirements to the state mandates. There's two cycles that we are required to implement. There's the 8-year update, which is the large-scale review and revision. It's a full review, cover to cover. Revisions are made as needed, including map changes and text policy changes. 20-year capital facilities plan is rolled out to the next 20-year planning horizon, and this was last completed in 2016. Then more frequently, we have the opportunity to do annual amendments, and this is the procedure that's in county code now. Those can happen no more frequently than once in a 12-month period. That's a GMA requirement. There are a few exceptions to that for emergencies and new subarea plans and some other things spelled out in statute. We do not have to do an amendment every year, and there's a few bulleted items in the GMA review that outlines those requirements. Under our current procedures, we do an annual amendment only if the board decides that a review is needed. So there's an initial process to do that evaluation, and they can decide not to do an annual review. The scope of the amendments are established by resolution, and typically we actually go through two resolutions, an initial and a final. I'll talk a little bit more about that. The board has significant discretion in that process. We are required to look at all of the amendments as a batch. So they might be developed over slightly different time frames and through different processes, but by the time they get to the Planning Commission, they're all hitched together as one package and have to move through as a package. And that's so they can be, the cumulative effects of those can be considered. Currently, our own code requirement is that all amendments must be consistent with the existing comprehensive plan. So that's one of the criteria expectations in our code. That's not a GMA requirement. And like I said, there are some exceptions to the 12-month and the batch requirement process. So to give you a sense of what that looks like, this is the 8-year cycle scheduled out. So a couple of important things to note in this is we also have a Shoreline Master Program periodic review that is also 4 years desynchronized with the comprehensive plan. So that's to be adopted in year 4. So there's a significant amount of work to be done there in the middle of our comp plan 8-year cycle. There's some ongoing work around implementation and annual 6-year capital improvement plan updates every year. And we have an annual monitoring requirement that we have to do. This doesn't include, you know, special projects and other things that come up, some sub-area planning updates and things that might happen throughout this 8-year period of time. But then the 8-year update, the big review and update, really begins in year 4 and takes almost 4 years to complete. So it begins with the evaluation work that needs to be done under state statute. So that's the buildable lands report, land capacity analysis, and reasonable measures work. That leads then into selecting what the next, moving the growth target out 8 years. So we have a new 20-year planning horizon and what we're expected to accommodate as far as population and employment. And then from that, any alternatives are derived, and the CEPA process is completed. So we look at alternatives, select a preferred alternative, and then go through the formal consideration and adoption process. So all of that is about a 4-year period of time. You might have seen in the comparative matrix that other jurisdictions synchronize their annual amendments through this 8-year cycle in different ways. Some do them every other year. Some have year 1 and year 5 and year 2 and year 6 types of procedures. Many just do it annually with discretion by the elected boards. So looking annually, this wasn't in your packet, but this schedule for our current comp plan amendment process kind of helps highlight a few things about our annual process. First, there's 4 rows. We break our legislative procedures, whether it's comp plan amendment or a code update, into 4 phases. So the first we call our scoping phase, and in this, for comp plan amendments, that's the docketing process. And it actually is the beginning of what is ultimately a 14-month process for us in November. And one thing to highlight for later discussion is that it's in kind of a two-step process. So we adopt an initial docket by the end of the prior year, so in this case 2018, for the 2019 comp plan amendments. If applications are allowed in that docket, there's an application window, and then there's a final docket review where the board decides which amendments, including which applications, will proceed through final consideration and which ones will not. So then that development phase is the period of submitting applications and developing any county-sponsored amendments, kind of like the process we're doing tonight as part of that. And then analysis is preparation of staff reports and doing the CEPA review. And at that point, another important thing on this graphic is, in an annual process, there's not time to do an environmental impact statement if an amendment triggers a CEPA threshold determination for an EIS. So at that point, any amendment that requires an EIS kind of gets unhitched and pushed forward into a future year, when once that EIS process is completed. So it comes out of the batch and will hook, become part of a future batch to be considered.
Would it kick it into 4 years then? Because if you started it, let's say, some month in 19, and you get into 20, and then you need the EIS, could it be finished in 2021, or would it end up back in 22 in the next cycle?
Well, so hopefully, as this is shown, we'd be able to do the EIS process kind of from mid-2019 to mid-2020. And then once we have a final EIS, it hitches back up into the batch that's being considered in 2020.
Okay. Sorry about that. I forgot the rules. I didn't speak into the microphone.
But, right, you know, depending on what is entailed, it could, if it doesn't hit that mark in 2020 and the EIS isn't finished, then it's going to be pushed out to the next year.
Okay.
And those of you who are around for last year's process, you might remember that there was one on Dickey Road where it was pushed out for a year. This year we'll be making the CEPA determination on that. And so depending on that determination, it will either be adopted this year or at some future point when the EIS process is complete.
Okay. Yep.
And then the consideration phase. So just to give you kind of a visual schedule as we think through this. So I'm going to highlight a few things as we through these four phases. For those of you who were around last year, this will sound familiar. If there are any questions throughout this, please feel free to ask. So in the first phase of scoping or docketing, we begin at a staff level by collecting throughout the year on an ongoing basis suggestions from staff and from residents for amendments, whether they're map amendments or text amendments. And then near the end of the year, November, we kind of cut that off and then review that catalog of suggestions with the board. From that, and the department makes recommendations. From that, the board adopts an initial docket resolution, which determines which county-sponsored amendments go into a full development process, okay, and then which applications will be able to be submitted.
All right. Now, having gone through last year's, there was quite some consternation about what amendments were chosen from the board, mm-hmm, or not the board, the commission.
Mm-hmm.
And that it seemed to me that we were in this process, the planning commission is kind of like floating along and unawares of what amendments have been proposals, what suggestions have been made. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, we're told, all right, here's the amendments that the board has chosen, which I know several of the commissioners were kind of left befuddled, mm-hmm, of, well, why were those chosen and not some others? Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering where we could possibly inform the Planning Commission of what is going through the system so that we're not, at the end, oh, here you go, this is what's going on.
And what we're talking about here is not laying out the docket for what you'll be seeing in 2018 or 2019. We're talking about how can we revise that process, and that's exactly the kind of feedback, yeah, and that we're hoping to get, mm-hmm, from the commission tonight.
Yeah. For on that point, for example, in the city of Bremerton, in the docketing process, the Planning Commission has a role in kind of doing a preliminary review of what has been proposed. And instead of the council having discretion, the Planning Commission actually has discretion to go through a preliminary analysis criteria and identify which ones are not ready or don't meet the criteria to move forward. Take things off. There are, in between that and where you are today, there's other options for how,
right,
the Planning Commission can
participate. And
yeah,
I'm just thinking that I would hope that the board would find that the Planning Commission's inputs and reviews and that would help, mm-hmm, them on their choices and that. knowing that they're going to make the final decision. But it would feel a bit more useful for the Planning Commission to know that, oh, we are a part of this process. We're doing inputs into this, like the staff and that, and trying to make sure that the right information is going forward.
Right. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Good point, too, just in the sense that it then isn't just internal in those early phases, but it's, you know, public servant volunteer time that's going toward that. And I mean, I could even argue I don't know what the criteria is that it has to pass or not pass before it got to us, right? Just so lack of kind of transparency as far as that step one moving forward.
Right. And to answer part of your statement, there are no specific criteria for what gets entered out of the docket. It's board discretion.
And let me add, 2 years ago, there were multiple years there, not necessarily concurrent, where there was a lot of controversy about how did certain ones get in, certain ones get out. In fact, there were even accusations that some of the projects got in because one of the planning commissioners at that time was a real estate broker and he got his in, and others were excluded. So there, you know, if we can get ahead of that game right with some kind of explanation to not only the planning commission but the public and everybody, you know, this was the basis of including or not including.
I think you might be referring to site specific, which this is not, but still
right.
The point of transparency versus any concept of favoritism or collusion or anything like that, right? That's what you're trying to avoid.
Right.
Well, it applies to site specifics, but it does apply to other types of amendments as well, because what the board is doing right now in the initial docket is they're laying out categories of types of amendments that they will be willing to hear. And I think, you know, trying to build some engagement of the Planning Commission in that process, I would regard that as a positive thing. We're trying to hit a sweet spot, though. Right now we have a 14-month process that has been rather demanding for the department and for staff, and it's very difficult to schedule it. You know, Peter has been, you know, frankly, having a nightmare experience trying to figure out how do we hit the right meetings at the right time and how do we get everybody their briefing materials with enough lead time, and trying to calendar that out. You were talking critical path schedule earlier.
That's a nasty puzzle, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's already a 14-month process. So one of the things that we're hoping to get out of this revision of 2108 is to try to figure out how can we build the engagement where we need it. Where can we streamline the process wherever we can so we're not over, you know, immersing ourselves in more bureaucracy than we really need? Because right now we are going above and beyond what the state requires for this. But how do we just make this process more efficient and yet still keep everybody engaged where they need to be and where we can get the most value out of everybody's time?
So relevant to this particular discussion around docketing, many other jurisdictions don't have this resolution type process. They have a schedule that's in code. This is when applications are due. This is minor or major. Certain, you know, types of amendments can be submitted certain years or not in some cases. There's preliminary criteria for determining, you know, kind of what moves forward or not. And there's some sort of process where there is legislative discretion, and that's likely still going to remain an important role in most jurisdictions. You know, how is that done? And in several cases, there's certain types of amendments where there's no discretion. Ones that are proposed by some, you know, official body within the jurisdiction might not have the discretion for removal, or in some cases, there's no discretion to remove applications. There's a whole range of variation on that theme.
And on that point, just one final note. You've heard our long range team several times on previous issues refer to transparency and predictability and opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's really what we're trying to get to here. We want to make it predictable for everybody, not only for the department and for staff and for the Planning Commission and for the board, but for the applicants. because we've seen examples where applicants have submitted proposals for projects that haven't necessarily been really well thought out, mm-hmm. because they don't know when the next opportunity is going to come up.
Right.
Whereas if I have a point in time, even if it's 5 years out, I have a time when I can plan for, and I can start to meter out my time and start to plan for it and schedule my own planning processes. Likewise, we want to be able to make sure that everybody knows when that time period is coming from, is coming. So you can, we can plan ahead, and it makes it more transparent for the public as well, who may have an interest in commenting on these projects as well.
I feel like, anytime the public has a chance to speak, somewhere along this process, two-thirds of the commentary is we weren't made aware.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, so along the lines of what Dave was just saying, in our current process where we go through this docketing, no one knows what will be allowed or not allowed until the end of the year, and then there's a 4 to 6 week window to throw your application together. Garbage in, garbage out, right? So that's a challenge. It's around the holidays and all that kind of stuff. So it's a challenging time of year, plus it's a really tight timeline. So a lot of jurisdictions have, an annual deadline with an open application period or a fixed application window in their code. But it's all known up front, and the process is very predictable. So if you're considering, contract purchase of a property and a comp plan amendment's going to be needed down the road, you can be planning 2, 3, 4 years in advance for that process and come in with a really clear, good application. Another thing with our process currently, and it's not all jurisdictions do this, but require a staff consultation or a pre-application meeting. We've tended to find that to be really useful because mm-hmm. This is not a process people are usually familiar with, and the types of requirements that they need to fulfill, like capacity calculations and how does this relate to policy language. This is a world that most people do not live in, so those meetings are usually very educational, and we can provide a lot of clear guidance for applicants. So I think it's really that's a valuable piece to it. And then for county-sponsored amendments, the timeline and the process varies depending on the nature and the scope of each amendment. But some, like sub-area plans, might take multiple years to develop, and then they get docketed and considered, when they're ready. Other things, we use existing advisory groups to work on or create new advisory groups, like our Kingston. Downtown Kingston work was a new group that was created, and in both cases, the board reserves discretion to remove any amendment in that final docketing process. They can add items up until that final docket process too, but there's not a codified deadline, but there is a practical deadline by which things can get in the batch or not get in the batch as we go through the process.
I have a point there that I have looked at these before, and they probably be the last time I look at this whole set of procedures. But and I like them. I think they're very reasonable and very helpful in trying to get a lid on how things get done. And for the most part, they're a repetition of what has already been done. And we have Chapter 21. 0.08 is displayed here in attachment 5, and you kind of refer to it up here a little bit. But I noticed something new that is in this year. I haven't seen it before, and that is it reflects this language a little bit. The county is exempt from this section, and that appears so many times in these sections, which are reasonable and justifiable. I'm just more than a little bit curious why we have that new language in there. I can refer you to a page.
Right. Yeah. So, So it's a...
Okay, here we go. The first time it occurs to me is on page 5 of 13 in attachment 5.
Right.
And when you say section, you're talking about the entire section, 2108.050.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, so in the current procedure, the county doesn't have to prepare an application like an outside entity would. We still have to meet the same criteria. We're not exempt from that, but exempt from the application process. A lot of the other jurisdictions in the comparison matrix, you know, everybody does an application. Their county council or their department or an outside applicant, they all have to fill out the same paperwork. So that's something that could change in this process, is the same documentation.
But what actually occurs is that I think there was a county-sponsored amendment fairly recently that we went through. Can't remember the details of it, mm-hmm. but staff report was made. All of the steps went through that we normally do anyway. Maps were displayed. All the information that we normally get was there. All the work was done. So in that case, the county did not really exempt itself from anything, and it seemed to be transparent and clear and predictable and all that stuff. I'm just curious what kinds of amendments are we talking about here that the county is not going to hold itself to many of these provisions?
Right. To my recollection, and just quickly scanning through this, that language shows up in section 2108.050,
correct,
which is the procedures for proposing amendments, and it's really spelling out the application process. So the county, like I said earlier, is exempt from preparing and submitting an application. We still have to, you know, propose items that get docketed in the resolution, but we don't have to fill out a full proposal and write how it meets the criteria ahead of time. But when we get to section 070, the criteria for recommendation or decision, the county is not exempt from those. So we have to do a staff report, do a full review to the criteria, and the Planning Commission and the board are bound by their relevant sections here, the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and I could see how when I look at 070, mm-hmm. I saw right above that, this section does not apply to amendments proposed by the county itself, which is kind of jarring language and might want to think about some wordsmithing to make it a little softer. But that is a kind of a footnote to the section that went like 3 pages before.
Right,
and so
exactly.
So you come all through this whole thing, and I kind of interpreted it mistakenly to be referring to section 070.
Right.
And, you know, of course, the criteria are all real solid and good criteria. So,
yeah. And I think that's an example of how this section of code can be clarified. I think this could be rewritten in a more plain way so it's more easily understood.
You said something that caught my attention that led me to believe that this might be the handout might be perceived as proposed language. This is the existing code.
True, but that language is not in the existing code as posted on the county code website.
It is. This attachment came straight from the website language.
It is.
I actually did check this
okay.
before I
okay.
came to this meeting.
Yeah.
this was printed off of the
this was
the
exported
website.
Straight
right.
from the online.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
if you say so, it's
there's nothing proposed in this language.
Right.
This is included so that way we have something to talk against.
Yeah.
But with that said, I'm hearing your concern there.
Anyway, I said, gee, I don't remember this, and I went back and I looked, And I looked at each of these sections, and I tried to find that language. And somehow, when I did that, I didn't see this language. So I may have overlooked it.
I'll look it up right now.
Okay. So while you're doing that, Commissioner Nevins' comments caught my attention because I still remember.
Excuse me?
Your comments caught my attention because I still remember the maneuvering at the county level with NASCAR. And these things happen from time to time that you're expecting, big projects, et cetera. So I think you made a good point, not only with the language, but what kind of projects, you know, would that apply to?
Yeah.
What situations? And you referenced one that happened, a county-sponsored amendment. You can remember, you know, what the specifics were, but those things could happen from time to time. And obviously you're writing this language with the idea that at some point, if it survives all of us, new people come along and administer it too. So it's important.
So briefly, the analysis phase is when we do all the SEPA work and the staff report. Just to remind you, if an EIS process is needed, it pushes it into a future year, as we discussed. And then the consideration phase is really where currently the bulk of your work happens. So we do our study sessions, hold public comment periods and hearings, deliberations, findings of fact, and recommendations with you. We revise staff reports based on that work. Draft up an ordinance, and then go through the same cycle with the board to a final decision. A lot of that is standard legislative process. Not mm-hmm. that a lot of that would change, but one area of consideration is the criteria, for example, that are used. To summarize public participation in 2018, for example, we try to put up a pretty thorough online open house so that whenever people come into this process, it's often in the 11th hour, they can go back and see what happened previously and what notifications and other things went out before that they overlooked or perhaps missed. We had 3 open houses throughout the county, 2 public comment periods, 2 public hearings, and tens of thousands of notifications that went out all throughout the process. So electronic distribution, we even put out to a neighborhood-based app called Nextdoor.com, which has quite a large subscription in Kitsap County. We do site-based sign posting for comp plan amendments if there's a site-specific. If it's a reasonable geographic area, not countywide, but for example, downtown Kingston, we mail direct notifications to every landowner within and surrounding the area. We formally notify tribes, publish legal notices, and try to do just more splash stuff on the county website to get people's attention.
And Nextdoor.com is used by, it stirred up a little conversation. it's used by a lot of homeowners associations and neighborhood groups and things like that.
Yeah, you'll find one that either says, like I'm Knoll Road or Allison Meadows or so you can find
exactly and you can open up membership or you can lock it down to a specific area.
And nice thing is it's the members of that are verified to be parts of their neighborhoods. Right. And I think last I looked countywide there's over 15,000 people subscribed to that. So pretty good distribution.
6-7%, yeah.
And these are to be very useful. And these are people who are interested in communicating in their neighborhood. So if even just one person in a neighborhood receives this, likelihood is that it'll get distributed further.
Group.
So
And for the record, us sitting through this process of you guys, all the open houses and the public hearings and the notifications, I think we internally know that you do a great job, and I kind of wish there could be a website page that says, before you say you weren't notified, read this list. Because
we guys have been doing this sort of thing a long time, and there's always somebody who will come in at the 11th
hour.
We hear it. And I'm not saying that to disparage anybody, because quite frankly, it's hard. People have their lives, and it's hard to track everything that comes by.
For sure.
A lot of information flows by. And frankly, a lot of people don't understand the difference between going to testify at a planning commission meeting and going to testify in front of the board.
Right.
It gets to that basic level. And and people just don't understand. So, you know, the more of this repetition and the more opportunity we can provide, the better.
Thanks.
And we, if you haven't seen our online open house, I encourage you to look at it. We maintain a full archive of all the meetings and the meeting materials. So if you are coming in the 11th hour, you can see, yeah, this went through five iterations or all of that previously. Okay. We have objectives and things that will likely change. Were there any additional questions about our current process that would help clarify things?
While I was in on page 9 of 13, which is in 070, you're talking about area-wide amendments, and when I read number 1 and number 5, I don't see the difference. I think there may be some redundancy there.
Yes, there's not only in that section, but throughout 070, there's quite a bit of redundancy from staff's perspective. And we heard comments last year in the staff reports about redundancy, and the criteria are there, and so we have to answer every criteria as redundant as they are.
Right.
So,
but this process, we can change it.
That's one of our
don't think we need to do that.
Right.
But, something that
sounds like
in your spare time.
Well, that's the intent of this discussion, is to get the ball rolling on what exactly do we, and not just as staff, but as a planning commission and as a board of commissioners and as a county, what do we want to change to make it work better?
Yeah.
Good.
And another one in that same section is number 7, which I read it and I wasn't sure I understood it. You might want to take a look at that and do some wordsmithing there.
Right. One comment I also remember from last year was in the staff reports, the staff analysis, I think in some cases there was a feeling that it didn't quite provide the detail necessary for you to be able to sit and evaluate the criteria. And part of it, I think, is how the criteria are written. But I took that to heart on how we reply to criteria as well. So we'll try to improve on that this year and hopefully through this process improve criteria so that perhaps it's much more straightforward to provide a clear response so that it's easy not only for you but for applicants and others to be able to read it and make sense, heads or tails, out of it's pretty arcane detail in some of this process.
Okay. Well, thank you both for the presentation. And any other comments or questions before we move on? Hearing none. Dave, are you here to do administrative update? I heard Mr. Bulger's name come up.
Yes, several times.
Uh-huh.
So, I think as you heard at the beginning of the meeting, Jim Bulger has taken a position with King County. So he's leaving the department. Tomorrow will be his last day. And so the department does intend, and this is in consultation with the board, the department does intend to actively recruit for the position. The position will be advertised, I believe, starting next week. But don't quote me on that part. It will be open for 3 weeks. And right now we have two assistant director positions that are vacant because we're also missing an assistant director position on the building fire marshal side of the house as well. We feel like we're covered right now because our director comes from that side of the shop. So he's got comfort in that area, and we feel like we've got that covered. So the assistant director, the area that Jim covered, which was for planning and environmental programs and for development services and engineering, will be the first one to be filled. So that's going to be recruited very quickly. We also have a vacancy right now on the Planning Commission. Shelley, as you know, is no longer on the Planning Commission. Commissioner Garrido is working on making an appointment I know she has somebody in mind. I'm not sure if she's made a final decision or not, but she is actively trying to do that and to get that done, that position filled pretty quickly.
And is that based on it being balanced north, central, south?
Yeah, we still need to maintain that distribution. And I know the commissioner has also expressed interest in gender balance on the commission, and I'm sure she's considering other things too.
Okay.
The LUTAC.
I'm looking around.
Yeah, you brought up the wrong night to talk gender balance.
All right, Robin is our sole representative.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robin.
quite She's in charge, so we all get that.
So with regard to LUTAC, Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, the Land Use Technical Advisory Committee is meeting next week, and they will be addressing the designation of rural centers. This is connected to the funding distributions through Puget Sound Regional Council. And so Puget Sound Regional Council has changed some of its criteria, so now Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council is having to respond to that. And so they'll be addressing rural centers. They will also be addressing the buildable lands program and our land capacity analysis. So now that we have some funding from the Department of Commerce to start to do some work on land capacity analysis, where we have fallen short in past years, beginning in this past state fiscal year and moving forward, we have some funding. We've hired Kristen Howard, who's been as an associate planner, who's been working very closely with Peter on figuring out how do we best institutionalize our land capacity analysis. So it's not a fire drill every 8 years just ahead of the comp plan. We want to institutionalize it so that way we can do annual updates on the data. We'll have our land capacity data regularly updated. We want to daylight it. We're mocking up a dashboard, so that way anybody can go online and look at what our land capacity analysis is and what the data are, what the housing numbers are, what the employment data are that we're leaning on. And then that will directly feed into our buildable lands analysis when it comes to the evaluation portion. So that's gonna be discussed at the LUTAC meeting on next Thursday. And a big part of the discussion is that we're changing, because the requirements have changed for the county on how we do all this work, we're also having to work with the cities to get the city data. And so Peter is going to be attending that meeting and talking and working with the cities, along with Jeff Remack, our director, kind of think about how are we going to be transferring data, how do we institutionalize this as a process, and how do we make it just a regular state of affairs so it's happening on an ongoing basis rather than the 8-year fire drill. Peter, did you want to add anything to that part?
One quick question about that. We are doing the analysis, trying to get the data in that. And one thing that I've noticed over the years is we never really go back and look at how well we did our analysis. I've never really seen any data that says, hey, we were pretty good on this one, this wasn't so good. And it seems like if you don't look back at how your analysis was, then you're really not able to say, yeah, our analysis is good.
We do, but the methodology for it has changed and evolved over time.
Okay.
So when I'm choosing my words very carefully as I say this, because when you think about land capacity analysis, think about that as the forward look. This is looking at how much population are we getting, what are our targets, what do we anticipate will happen into the future, and how do we plan for that. When I refer to buildable lands analysis, if you look straight into the language of the Growth Management Act, it refers to a review and evaluation program. That's what buildable lands is the backwards look.
Okay.
That comes every 8 years, where we say, how did we, the land capacity analysis is the forward look, the backwards look is saying, how did we actually perform against the targets that we were supposed to be planning right. for? And then it further requires, if you have a gap, and there's always some gap because you never hit it just right, but when you identify that gap, what are the reasonable measures that you're going to take in order to try to narrow that gap? And for those of you who have been exposed to the discussions about reasonable measures, you know that's a very loaded word because it's got all kinds of connotations attached to it. You know, because you know it just gets into a much bigger discussion. But
it sounds like the cycle has built into it a review and intent to improve and close disparities.
Exactly.
Gaps.
That's the intent of the of the way the evaluation portion of the act, the monitoring and evaluation portion of the act was done. Not all counties are required to do that, but most of the Puget Sound counties are.
And there's a so the look back also informs and refines the assumptions made in the look forward. So we should be refining that and updating those before right. we project forward as well. Okay.
So what I would like to do is propose to the Planning Commission it. Is that at some future point when Peter and Kristen have had an opportunity to bake it a little bit more and settle some of the discussions with the cities a little bit more, I'd like the opportunity to come back to this commission and go through and review this in a little bit more detail. So that way, as we're moving forward, you have a crystal clear understanding of how we're running the numbers, what the numbers are telling, what we think the numbers are telling us. And so that way, we're all able to evaluate all this mountain of data in a consistent way.
Well, and it also offers you the opportunity to feed it to us in pizzas, not in here's half a mountain and here's the other half a mountain and sorry,
exactly.
it's due tomorrow.
Right, right.
Because that's where, you know, Peter sees that 14 months out and knows that's the battle.
Yeah, yeah. And where we have this, you know, from the comp plan update process, we have this 14 years of stuff all compressed into one work study. When we get to the actual comp plan, to the regular update, the 8-year update, we're looking at 8 years of information and change and development and, you know, that we're trying to assess, and that's a lot to soak in at one time, and it becomes a huge fire drill for everybody, and so we're trying to figure out how can we spread this out over time.
Sense. And yes, please come back when you've got the additional info that you want to get back on the docket to talk about it.
Right. And then just the last one is just purely informational that we have. We've talked with you previously about doing an update of the use table in Title 17. So we've started that process. We have a survey out in the community right now that's floating around. Hopefully you've seen it all. You've all had an opportunity to see it. If you haven't, let me know, and I'll ask Liz to forward it to you. But we've been advertising this, and we've talked with the DAG and with the KBA and the Developers Council and with anybody in the ports and anybody who will listen, handing out little cards with the link to the community survey. The survey has actually been pretty useful, and you guys are showing me some blank looks that lead me to believe that that you haven't heard about this. So, Peter, would you make a note of that for Liz, please, to get this out to the Planning Commission? The survey has actually been pretty well received so far. In the first week alone, in the first 24 hours alone, we got over 300 respondents to this survey, and now we're in the ballpark of, I want to say, about 450. So this is just kind of getting some community, getting a sense from the broader community as to what kinds of compatibility issues they're seeing in their community. Then once we go through that, we will use that to inform some of the changes that we are thinking might want to happen in the use table. And then we're going to bring that back to this commission to really put our heads together and start to really study this and really work it out. So that way,
the Planning Commission is taking a very active role, we hope, in developing a proposal that will then go out to the public for broader review. Okay. So we're not just flinging the doors open. We're trying to do this in kind of a stepwise fashion, but we really want to take advantage of all of your expertise in getting a first draft done, so that way the broader public can react. And that's all I have for you.
Plenty to chew on. All right, item H on our agenda is anything for the good of the order?
You delayed minutes.
Did. I did. So, to go back to how witty I was earlier, I guess, and just as a reminder that we were waiting to see if we might get quorum by the end of the meeting, and we did not, in the sense that we still have five, which is why we held the meeting with quorum, but those that were absent from meeting minutes, April 16, May 14, and May 21, are some of those in attendance here, and therefore we cannot vote to approve meeting minutes today, and that will get moved to a future meeting.
I have a point, a request, actually. The Planning Commission website has all of the materials that we are discussing today available for anybody to look at, and often has the audio of previous meetings available, plus the past minutes, the minutes that were approved. There must be some reason why we can't put draft minutes up there, but for me it would be helpful to have the draft minutes on that spot, and also the audio. Now, the draft minutes can be, captioned, subject to gross changes in the near future. But for the purpose of just information being available, this is nothing that we do is secret. So, I would say the draft minutes would be acceptable to put up there.
No.
Plus the audio, and if there's some reason, I'm willing to accept it, but it would be helpful to me if I could work that way.
I'm sure there's a reason. I have no idea what that reason is, but I will talk with Amanda, and then we will figure it out.
It may be a legal consideration. I don't know.
Well, as long as they're labeled draft, I mean, my gut reaction to that is as long as it's labeled draft, I don't.
Often the Board of County Commissioners puts up a draft agenda and labels it as draft.
Right. Yeah, we can look into that.
And it also allows us, we talked before we started recording this evening, that, in Tom's and my mind at least, if we had the minutes in front of us and listened to the audio, then even having been absent would not feel that we had to necessarily abstain from the vote.
Exactly. And honestly, I ran into this exact challenge when I was pulling together the annual report for the Planning Commission last year, because three of the sets of meeting minutes were not posted yet.
Right.
So then I had to go hunt them down.
Okay. Yeah, so if we can get a circle back on that as far as what those answers are, both the audio and if draft minutes can be up, that would be awesome. Very good. Yes, Mr. Svensson.
Quick question. Our agenda indicates that we'll be meeting on July 16th and the 30th. Is that a typo, or is that likely? I just kind of need to know for scheduling.
We're typically first and third, and
yeah,
now
typically
there's a fifth.
First and third, and I'm not sure how we got onto the 30th unless it was either
2 weeks.
Every other.
Yeah. That may just be a typo in the schedule.
I think there's only one meeting scheduled in August, so I think that might have been moved. The first August meeting might have been moved since there's, I think, 5 weeks in July, or 5 Tuesdays in July. So,
if we could get an email that gets that clarified, that'd be great.
We are likely to meet on the 16th. That's our regular
agenda-wise.
At this point,
expected.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Unless we get a little bit closer and we realize that there's not enough to use the time wisely. We're doing our best not to make some of you drive, from the north end of the county here for a 10-minute item.
It's appreciated. Okay. With nothing else, 8:01, we're adjourned. Ha ha ha.